Attic named Dennis. Everybody hear me? Okay. I'd like to thank the committee. I'd like to thank Robbie for asking me to come out here and share my experience. Thank you, Hope. It's an honor and a privilege to give back to Narcotics Anonymous. Anytime, anywhere, because I know beyond the shadow of a doubt this program saved my life. Share a little bit about my background. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about using and, reasons why I'm an addict, because it doesn't really matter. Like our reading says, we don't care about what you've done in the past, where you've been, who your connections were, how much or how little you have, only on what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. So I have to keep my focus on that in Narcotics Anonymous. I will tell you that I came from come from a big Irish family. My dad was one of nine kids, and I have 32 first cousins on that side of the family. And when I was growing up, every Sunday we got together, and the one strict rule that there was that the kids could only drink beer. The liquor was for the adults, the beer was for the kids. So I tell you that because as far back as I can remember, when people talk about the first time using, I don't remember my first time. I have memories of my grandmother giving me her whiskey and drinking it and feeling funny. And I remember like acting times when I really wasn't feeling it, but I would act like I was feeling it, and it would give me attention. All the adults would be laughing, and I felt like I was part of it. It made me feel important. So on some level, I kind of started tying getting attention together with using. Growing up, anything that I tried to do, I did well. Anything I put an honest effort into, I did well. Sports, music, school, whatever it was. But at a young age, I stopped putting an effort into things because everything became less important than the party, than the bag, the bottle, the keg. And I was one of the people that I just honestly believed that the party had, there was never a good reason for the party to end, ever. And that never changed throughout my using career. That was kind of like my mantra. But I mean, like at a party, if everybody was passed out and there was still alcohol, I was the guy running around writing on people with markers and shaving off their eyebrows and stuff like that, because as long as there was something to use, I wasn't done. And so, the progression of the disease, eventually I quit caring about anything that mattered. I got into a lot of trouble. I got expelled from high school. Juvenile detention started the whole cycle of what this disease does to us. It takes everything that mattered to me, everyone that I loved, and basically destroyed it or stepped all over its heart, their heart. So the end result for me, I tried geographical changes like our literature talks about. I tried everything, medicine, religion, psychiatry, just like the readings. And then I came into Narcotics Anonymous, and court ordered, trying to beat a charge, trying to appease a PO, a judge, whatever it might have been, over the time. But like my first exposure to Narcotics Anonymous was in 1984 in St. Francis Adolescent Rehab in Pittsburgh. And they came in for H&I, and for 10 years I went to meetings, but I disqualified myself the minute I walked into the meeting. I looked for reasons why it wouldn't work for me, how I was different than you, and I never connected to what Narcotics Anonymous really was. I honestly, in my mind, like I thought it was like some kind of soft bitch shit. It was a bunch of people sat around and cried because they couldn't stop using. They couldn't handle their drugs or whatever it might have been. But so I never really tapped into what was going on, like the important thing, the love. And then when it talks in our literature about when we were beaten, we became willing. And there was a point when I was beaten, like, and it was outside circumstances. It was like I was homeless. I was on the north side in the shelter. I was dope sick. I had nothing in my pocket, so all my road dogs and best friends weren't opening their door to me in the middle of winter. I found out, like, a lot of things about me and the world that I live in, and I wanted to die. I thought that dying, by this time I tried that Jekyll and Hyde thing. I'd been married, I had a couple kids. I tried to play the role of a non-addict, I guess. But I thought rather than being a parent to my kid, a better option was to die. And I reached out for help. And so I got help, but this time I got into a treatment center, and I went in there and And for the first time ever, I did what they suggested. And it was the same thing they always suggested, but this time I was willing to do it. And I started, they said, if you ain't praying, you ain't saying. And I always talk about this because it was real important to me. I would think against God. I had this issue with God because my self-centeredness was like, why am I an addict? Why do I have to be an addict? If there was a God, he wouldn't have done this to me. There wouldn't be suffering in the world, whatever it was. I was like that dude. I was that guy that I would invite the Jehovah Witnesses in the house just to poke holes in their story. So I had these issues, and they said, if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. And so I was really willing. I was willing to do whatever it took. So I remember going into my room and, like, getting ready to pray, get down on my knees, and I remember looking around because I felt like I was doing something wrong. I felt like I was doing something really weak. And I started my prayer, and I said, look, I don't even know if, like, you're listening. I don't know if you're real, but I need help. And I wholeheartedly today believe that, like, until you're ready to ask for help, you're not ready to receive it. Because I believe in that moment I started getting help. I didn't stay clean after that. I did for a while. I came around in Narcotics Anonymous. I got a sponsor. I started working some steps. And I got some freedom in my life. But I didn't stay clean because my whole life I played these roles. You know, I grew up and, like, and I always had a mask. I always played a role because I had no idea who I was truly, but I knew it had to be bad and it had to be hidden. And I know on some level I felt like I was lacking because at a very young age I started lying. I started telling stories that weren't necessarily true to make my life seem cooler or to seem more interesting than it was. So through step work, being here and looking back, I realized on some level I already felt that my life was lacking. So I would always play these different roles and be who I needed to be because as addicts, like, we're really good chameleons. We can come into a situation, we can read the room, figure out who we need to be to get what we need to get, from drugs to acceptance to a pat on the back, whatever it is that we need to get, we can get it. And so when I came into recovery that time, like, what I did was I put on a new mask, and it was a recovery mask. I was like recovery dude. You know, and I said the right things because I've been coming around long enough. I could talk a good program, you know. And I got real cocky with it. I started thinking, like, you know, I should be my sponsor's sponsor because, like, I think I had this down better than he did, you know. And this other thing too is that all these newcomers were coming to me asking me questions, and I was answering them. I was, like, helping them in their program, and it wasn't until that my sponsor pointed out that, like, none of them were male that I realized the truth. But anyhow, just like all the other times I got clean, I had consequences. I had warrants. I had been running away from my responsibilities and wrecking my past. So they caught up with me, and I ended up locked up. And just like all the other times I've been locked up, I felt sorry for myself. I got a store going. I started profiting inside, and I thought about what I was going to buy as soon as I got out. And just like all the other times, I got out and I got high. But what was different about this time is that, like, I had experience in Narcotics Anonymous. It wasn't just me coming around and hearing a bunch of talk about what NA could do for me. Because I could disregard that. I could always say, well, yeah, that's what worked for you, but that's not, but I'm different. You didn't use like I did, or I'm different than you, or whatever bullshit I could feed myself. This time it was truly my experience that I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I did a little bit of work, and I got freedom in my life. And freedom on a level of freedom from myself and my own guilt and resentment and anger. Like, I remember getting high and thinking back and just missing laughing. Because when I came to NA and I did a little bit of work, I found myself laughing at things because they were funny. Not because someone had it worse than me. It was just funny. I remember going bowling and sitting in Eaton Park and drinking coffee or playing spades all night drinking Red Bull. That's more like it. But I remember, like, having a good time and, like, being okay with myself. And I found myself using again. And my real moment of clarity came with the fact that, like, my whole life I was afraid that somebody was going to think I was weak. Somebody was going to think I was a coward. I went to the other end of the spectrum in all areas of my life because I did feel fear and I was afraid and I didn't want anybody to know that. And in that moment, when I found myself using, I knew that the only logical explanation for that, because now NA working was the evidence in my life, it was my experience, was that I was a coward. And it was an absolute truth. And it was a truth that hit me in that place, so deep and so hard that I didn't want to be me. I felt like ripping my skin off. So I got up and I left. I was living in projects in a town called Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, and there was a meeting on Wednesday night called the Double Bubble, and I walked down the hill, and they had a beginner's meeting at 7 o'clock, and I walked in, and I said I needed help. And I don't remember clearly if, like, I was crying or what the situation was, but I do remember, like it was yesterday, that everybody got up and they hugged me, and they told me that they loved me. And I remember thinking to myself, why do I walk away from this? This is the only place in my life that I've ever gotten this absolute unconditional love. These people didn't want anything from me. They didn't care what was in my pocket. All they wanted was for me to be okay. And that was the last time I got high. That was over 12 years ago. And I got immediately into the program. Like, I started working steps. I got involved with service before I had any clean time to do service. I was helping out with activities committee, and I was waiting for me to get the clean time to have an H&I commitment. So I started on this path. I mean, I started got in the middle because, like they have the saying, you know, if you get in the middle, you can't fall off if you're on the outside. And it's so true because, like, I got in the middle and I showed up. I said 90 and 90. I don't know how many I did. I'm OCD, but not that OCD that I counted how many meetings I did in the first. I just went because I felt safe at meetings. I like going to meetings. I saw people that were trying to do the same thing as me, people that were happy to see me, which I hadn't had in a long time. And I felt good. I was more evidence I was accumulating. Every time I went to a meeting, I left there feeling better than when I went there. So the 90 and 90, what I did 90 and 90 and another 90. I mean, I went to a meeting every day for my first 2 years. Absolutely. Maybe even more than that. And the reason is because, like, I don't know how to live. Like, it was this one thing in the reading that I always kept missing, which says, we don't know how to live with or without drugs. And I kept thinking that it's okay, I can't live with drugs, so if I put down the drugs, I'll be cool. So I'd come around and I'd do, like, the three-step shuffle where I'd hang out for a while and get clean. But I was still locked in this obsession of, like, doing what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do for a little while was come around and hang out with you. But without doing the work and finding out the trick of how to do what I don't want to do, I was still in that pattern. It's just what I wanted to do changed, and eventually what I wanted to do went back to the old ways, and I was absolutely powerless not to go because I didn't have that evidence. I didn't have that experience of what NA could do or what it really was. So coming around in all them times, like, it gave people the opportunity to know me, and it gave me the opportunity to get to know people and to make friends. Got to make friends in Narcotics Anonymous. Got to have fun in Narcotics Anonymous. Because if we ain't having fun and we don't have any friends, why the fuck would we stay here? Seriously. I mean, this is not medicinal. You know, you can't do NA just when you don't feel good. I'm going to go do a little NA and be okay. It's a way of life. Talks about it in our literature, man. And, like, when I talk about friends and when they say support group, and the support group is like, for me, it can't be a bunch of yes men. It can't be people around me agreeing with anything I say and everything that's going on. I got to have people around that support me to find spiritual solutions to the problems that life is going to throw at me. I got to have people around that are going to call me on my shit. My good buddy Eric just rode down here with me, called me on my shit on the way. That's what we do for each other. There have been times in this journey, we got clean around the same time, we've been on this path together, and, like, he's my go-to guy. You need some go-to people. You need people that will, you can go to and dump your shit out and let them pick through it and tell you what they see. Because we are each other's eyes and ears. We can't see the picture when we're inside the frame. So a lot of times we can't even tell accurately what's going on with us. We need somebody who loves us enough to tell us the truth, to point stuff out. So, in this time that I came around and I did these meetings, I got some friends, I got connections, I got well-rooted in the program, and like I'm cemented in. I drank the Kool-Aid. I believe in Narcotics Anonymous wholeheartedly. I believe what the literature says. I don't believe it and then have periods where I don't believe it. I believe it all the time. I might choose to do the wrong thing, but I know Narcotics Anonymous is my solution to whatever life's problem. Because truly, it's not what life throws at me. It's how I handle it. It's how I react to it, how I perceive it, because I have this disease. You have the disease of addiction, and that's not something that is outside doing push-ups, like I hear people saying, or it's hiding in a closet and waiting for me to walk by so it can jump out on my back. It's in my brain all the time. I've never seen the world through non-addict eyes, ever. So I have no reference of like the non-addict dentist as opposed to the addict dentist. I'm an addict. It affects every area and aspect of my life, like our literature says. So what that means is that how I see you, the world, how I make things about me that have nothing to do with me, like, it's all my disease. So I have to have other people in my life. Like it says in our literature that personal recovery depends on NA unit. So what that means is, like, I need you for my personal recovery. I can't do this by myself. I can't sit up on a mountaintop somewhere, pray and meditate and read some literature and stay clean. Because if we could do that, we wouldn't be here, you know. So I got connected. I got people in my life. And, like, these people have become everything to me. Narcotics Anonymous has become everything to me. I hear a lot of people that talk about, like, NA gave me a life. It's not my life. That's not my experience. NA is my life. Because everything that I value in my life, everything that I work for, and everything that is important to me is a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous. So in living a life of being grateful for what I have, it's all because of NA. I look at it like I always envision this big oak tree, and there's like all the leaves and the branches. And each leaf is like a different blessing in my life, like between my relationship with my kids or being self-employed or able to go on vacation, not being locked up, like no PO, no CO, no PFA, no none of that stuff. Like those are all different leaves, you know? And I mean, I can see them anytime I want to look for them. But the thing is, in that tree, man, the trunk is Narcotics Anonymous, you know? And then without the trunk, there's no possible way for any of that other stuff to survive. And that's the truth, and that's how I see my life. So, like, this is the most important thing to me. It comes before my kids, it comes before work, it comes before my woman. There's nothing that I put in front of recovery. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't do other things in my life, because I have a great life. I do. I travel, I go places. I'm all about, like, experience and stuff. Because, like, for decades, there were no experiences other than one, which was get up, find ways and means, get high and obsess about the next one. That's what I did. There were times when I'd be sitting in the basement with guys talking about, you know what we ought to do someday when we get some money? We ought to go to a Steeler game. We ought to go on a trip. Knowing damn well if we get a couple dollars, we'll be back in that basement having the same conversation again. You know? And that's the cycle, that hamster wheel that I was stuck in for so long. So like now, I have freedom in Narcotics Anonymous. I can experience things, and I want to experience everything. I want to experience everything I can before I die. I want to get to the end of this life and be look back and have, like, no regrets. You know? So anyway, I'm going to talk a little about steps because they are recovery. So you know that. 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous is the program. There's like the program and there's the fellowship. The fellowship is a very important aspect of the program, but it's not the program. We work steps and that's how we recover. A lot of people get that confused. They think just hanging out around these rooms is the program and it will keep us clean. And it won't. I mean, some people can't stay clean and miserable. I mean, I'm not saying you can't. If that's what you want to do, that's cool. But I've been miserable for way too long. Way too long. That's not okay for me. So, So when I came around, I started working steps. Before, I did like a three-step shuffle a bunch of times, and I did them in my head, thinking I was practicing them. But what I've come to understand is that every step and every principle that there is, there's an action behind it. It's about what we do. It's not about what we say. We don't talk a program in here. We don't philosophize about a program. We do it. It says it all through our literature. But anyway, so I came in and first step is all about being powerless over the disease of addiction. And see, today, like, I've been here for a minute, and it's not so much, like, I'm not powerless over my active addiction as far as using, drugs. Which I could in any minute. It's always a choice, and you know that is the game ender. But for me, it's about acceptance of the disease, which the disease thinking is in my brain. Okay, so when I have acceptance for the disease, I have to accept my thoughts, and my thoughts can be extremely effed up, a lot, you know. And like, I can beat myself up about things that I think, or things the way that I still feel, or that I shouldn't feel this way with this much time. And for me, that's a lack of acceptance of the disease, because the disease, like I said, is a part of me. It never goes away. It's always there. So in the first step, I have to accept the fact that I'm powerless. And powerless to me, it's talked about in our literature, is that using against our will. And there's how many examples of that? When I first got clean, I could wrap my mind around that, because there was 100 times that I threw away all the crack pipes and all the needles, and then the doorbell rang and I was digging through the garbage over and over and over. But I really didn't want to use, but I couldn't stop using. And that became very clear to me after I went back out and came back and found myself sitting in meetings high. Wanting so badly to be clean, but not able to. And sitting in it, because a meeting is the last place in the world I want to go when I'm high. I mean, yeah. So, but and then the unmanageability. Unmanageability to me is my barometer today. Anytime that unmanageability shows up in my life, then I know that I need to look at something. I've been off the path somewhere, and now I'm stepping in some shit. You know, the unmanageability when I got here was very evident. It was like, you know, homeless, being locked up all the time. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Nobody on this planet would be happy to see me. That kind of shit. That's glaring unmanageability. Today it's a little more subtle, but it's still there. Second step came around and said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I got real messed up on this one, because I thought that one was about God. And it really isn't. It has nothing to do with God. It has to do with coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves is restored sanity, which is you guys. Which is, a power greater than me is me and another addict. It's a power greater than me. A room full of addicts is a power greater than me. The Department of Corrections was a power greater than me. My disease is a power greater than me. But the thing is, restoring me to sanity on my own, I tried it 100 times and it couldn't work. So it had to be something greater than me to restore me to sanity. Okay, and for me, the bottom line with the second step is just coming to believe that NA is my solution. That's it. It's my solution. Like I said before, no matter what the problem is, it's my disease perception of the problem that's really the problem. How I take things so personally, how I want to off myself because things didn't go my way today. You know, that's the disease. So the solution to all my problems is always more NA. Always. That's the second step. It's always more NA, no matter what the fuck happens. Excuse my language. I'll try not to swear, but it's not my strong point. No matter what happens in life, my solution is the same. And the strong evidence, it says in our second step, that many of us pass over this with a minimum of concern, only to find out we can't work the rest of the steps, having not worked a thorough second. And the evidence of working a thorough second is, when something happens, I reach for the phone. My first thought is, I got to get to a meeting. It's not, I got to run away. I got to find a way to get out of this. It's like, make a phone call. Because that's believing in this program. I've come to believe that NA is my solution. Doesn't mean it's a quick fix, but it's the solution. It's the only path that is going to lead to a way out of where I'm at. All the other ones is way deeper. Renting a backhoe to dig a deeper hole. Third step, you know, making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood them. I had a friend who told me very early on when I was struggling with this that basically and admitting in the first step that I have a disease that I'm powerless over. Second step, coming to believe that NA is my solution. The third step is like turning over my will. Is basically if I side with my recovery, I will never not find God's will. So whatever is best for my recovery will be God's will, and I still believe that and use that today. If I can't decide and I'm struggling making a decision and I think what's best for my recovery, it works. You know, it's guided me to the right job that didn't interfere with my recovery. It's guided me to the right situations, the right choices, the right people to stay away from. It's been very instrumental in my life. Okay, fourth step was all about, like, you hear all these bad, scary stories about fourth step, but they're all bullshit. Anybody who worked a thorough fourth step will never tell you that it's this terrible, horrible thing, because it's freedom. It's the first work that we put in and the first real shot of freedom that we get in this program. Because when we take a look at the inventory of us and our past and what we've done, we also have to be aware of the fact that we ain't doing it today. You know, things are already changing. And for me, man, it was like that stuff that I carried around that I never wanted to tell anybody. I carried around like old luggage. And it was there whispering in my ear all the time, like, fuck it. Might as well get high. What's the point? People in NA don't like you. All that disease thinking, which that is active addiction. You know, active addiction is not necessarily using drugs. It's that. It's that voice that comes up and whispers so seductively into your ear. Like, yeah, that looks like a good idea. You should do that. That's active addiction. So, but anyway, what happened was I did work the fourth step, and then right after that did the fifth step, and I got freedom. And it wasn't like all of a sudden the sky parted and there was harp music and it was like this beautiful thing that I was free from that point on. What it was I found moments where I wasn't accessible, where my brain wasn't going like a hamster wheel about something other than where I was and what I was doing. I found moments where I would get in the car and start driving and be like 15 minutes into a ride before I realized the radio wasn't on. You know, and like all my life, that's all I wanted. I didn't even know I wanted it, but I just wanted peace. I wanted a little bit of peace in my head because I never had it. I was always like, I was always somewhere else. I was always trying to be somewhere else. I was always, you know, my kids would be talking to me and I'd be nodding my head just like, you know, kind of like sponsorship. I'd be nodding my head, you know, but my mind would be down on what's going on down the street. What am I missing out on? You know, it was always somewhere else and something else. Some kind of regret, resentment of the past, fear of the future, guiding how I'm handling the situation right now. So what I got was the moments where it was like I was present. And it wasn't a whole lot. It was just here and there, you know. But it was like, it was what I wanted. And it felt good. Because when I came into NA, what was attractive to me, it wasn't the guy with the rims. It wasn't the guy with the bling on and like, you know, hips looking cool. It was the guys that sat in meetings and they were just like chill. Like, not wrong. Life would show up and they'd share about it and they were like, okay. Just like calm. You know? And I couldn't identify with that, but it was like very intriguing to me. But that's who I was drawn to. That's what I was attracted to. So getting a little piece of that, like a good addict, man, I got something that was really good and so I wanted more. So I immediately, like, I went in step work, the sixth step, the process of six and seven was like painful. Six was about like becoming hyper aware of the shit that I do clean that still makes me hate myself. My defects of character. And I don't know how it goes, like a chicken or the egg thing, but I don't know if it's like they got worse when I got on six or I just became aware of them more because I was on six. But anyway, I tried desperately to control them and just to stop doing them, and it didn't work. And what happened eventually was I got beat into submission, because in seven it says we humbly ask. And the only way to get into humbly asking was to surrender. And the only surrender only comes after a struggle. Like when I have sponsees to tell me about how six is kicking their ass or they can't stand it, or, and I'm like, good.
Yeah.
Good. Because if it didn't suck, it wouldn't work. You know? Things that don't suck don't change us. fucking changes them. So through this process, what I ended up with was, and still continue to have, a deeper level of self-acceptance. Good, bad, and the ugly. You know, I am who I am. Like, all the horrible parts of me that I thought were so terrible and needed to be hidden ain't so bad. And the grandiose bullshit perception that I carried to myself on other ends isn't even true. You know? So what I got was, like, an understanding of me. Then came 8 and 9. And 8 and 9, I can remember telling my sponsor, like, we were talking about freedom, and he said, yeah, well, 8 and 9, there's freedom in that. You know, make a list of all people you'd harmed and become willing to make amends. And I was like, you know what, I think I'm good on freedom. Because, like, I really feel a lot of freedom from 6 to 7. And he laughed, just like that. So then I did it. And what happened was that I found freedom. I found freedom from a level of guilt and shame that I didn't even know that I had. You know, because every other step that I've ever worked, I always tried to think of what this step will do for me, or what will it be like after I do it, prior to working it. And I could not wrap my mind around, you know, it's like trying to map someplace I'd never been, you know. But what I found was that there was this base layer of guilt and shame that I carried my whole life that I didn't even know was there. I just thought it was normal until it was gone, until it was lifted, until there was nobody on this planet that I felt too ashamed to see. So I got freedom. And then 10, 11, and 12, man, that's for me. 10 is all about, like, taking an honest look at where I'm at. Like, where are my feet today? Are my feet on the path? Or did I walk off the path? Am I doing everything for my recovery that I can? And I go back and forth with this. Sometimes I'll do the IP. I do journal. I write a gratitude list every day, which is, like, part of my 10, 11, and 12 altogether, because I do believe that writing a gratitude list is a form of prayer. There's a famous quote that says, if the one prayer I could utter was thank you, that would be sufficient. And I believe that. I believe that not only writing, but like an attitude, a posture of thank you is living a prayer. If I can look at everything in my life with the gratitude that is owed for it, I'm living a prayer. It's a conscious contact with my higher power. So anyway, the 10th step is all about taking a look at where I'm at, what am I doing. Not what am I thinking, what am I doing. I have to constantly separate that. I have to look at my actions, because I could be thinking a whole lot of whack stuff, you know, and feeling bad about myself. And like they say, you're doing better than you think you are. Like that's the case with me a lot of times. Like I'll beat myself up over some feelings or some way that I deem that I fell short. But when I look at my actions, that's not the case. You know, I'm showing up. I'm serving. I'm connected. I'm spending time with my kids. I'm showing up for work. I'm a good employee, a good employer. When I look at my actions, it's okay. The 11th step is the shit. I mean, it really is. It's like the reward step. It's the juice step. It's the power. It's the connection where I believe that the step work up until the 11th step kind of like is a way for me to clear. The people talk about the connection from the head to the heart. And for me, it's a way to clear away my fears and all of that stuff that stands in the way of my higher power's will for me, which in 11 has revealed was kind of like my will for me too the whole time. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And for me, that simply is love. And I say that as working the 10 steps before 11, realizing painfully what love isn't, before finding out what love is, to realize that this is about love. And the whole thing is I know that my higher power is love. I know that what we do here is love, but my understanding of love is what keeps changing. It keeps getting deeper. The more I understand me, the more I understand you, the more I understand with Vanessa. So, when I came around here and I came into Narcotics Anonymous, people hugged me and they loved me and they told me to keep coming back. And they looked the other way when I acted like an asshole. And they let me go and they let me bump my head and they let me figure out my own way and they loved me. But when I first came here, I couldn't identify what it was, that unconditional love, because I wasn't familiar. So I thought it was weird. And I thought you guys were weird. But I couldn't wait to come back. You know? I knew Narcotics Anonymous was my home long before I was able to stay clean. Because I came in here and I shared some stuff. Like, it took me a long time, but I shared some honest stuff. Not some surface bravado street bullshit. I shared some honest stuff from my gut. And I looked around the room and, like, there were a bunch of people nodding their head. And it was the first time in my whole life I felt like I fit anywhere. I knew it was my home. And I didn't stay clean. I went back out and I promoted the shit out of Narcotics Anonymous in every crack house and trap house in Pittsburgh. I was showing people my key tag law. Oh, you don't understand, man. They love you there. We got to go back. You should come with me. And I knew where I belonged. I knew it was my home. People would tell me, man, would you shut up? You are killing my high, man. Like, but, yeah, so like I said before, like, I believe in this, man. I believe in this process. And, like, through the 11th step, I keep finding a deeper understanding of my higher power and what that means. And, like, love is, like, not, it's not a feel-good, man. It's not even a feeling. It's an action. It's like, what do we do here? It's when we pick up somebody new or we spend talking to a newcomer. Like it says in our readings, 1 minute longer than we want to walk away. Staying on the phone 1 minute longer. It's love. Like, I don't like the acronyms too so much, but there's one that I really do like, and it's love. It stands for loss of voluntary effort. Because that's what love is. It's about, what am I putting in? What am I doing? I'm loving you. I'm welcoming you. In Narcotics Anonymous, we love each other. Like, carrying the message to others. That's the 12th step. You're going to the 12th step, and it's about, you know, through having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps to try to carry the message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. And, like, carrying the message to addicts comes in everything that we do. It comes in how we drive to work. The way we talk to people. The way we are with our kids. You want to find out how somebody's working a program? Talk to their significant others at home, especially if they ain't even in recovery. Talk to them. You know, because it's not about what we say to them. Meaning, it's not how good we share from a podium. That's got nothing to do with this thing. Carrying the messages and how we live. We are hypersensitive people to bullshit and to the truth. So anybody stands up in front of you and they're bullshitting you, like, every single one of you is going to know, that dude is full of shit. We got the best training in the world. Addiction. We know who's full of shit. We know by looking in somebody's eyes what they got in their pocket. You know? But we also are hypersensitive to the truth. When we hear the truth, it hits us in a deep place that only the truth can do. In the core of the essence of who we are, we identify with it. That's what's so important about Narcotics Anonymous. It says the healing power of empathy. We understand each other on a level that nobody else can. We get it. We are the same. There's outside differences that you can focus on if you want. There's a whole lot of exact sameness going on with us. And if you tap into that, man, that's true anonymity. That's removing everything that separates us, from our gender to our race to sexual identity, creed, all that stuff. That's why this is so powerful, man. We understand each other's pains. It's like we are all survivors of the same horrible shipwreck. We're bonded for life. All you got to do is walk in here and say, I'm an addict. And we know. We know you. And the more we know us, the more I know me, the more I know you. And I can love you, like they say, we'll love you till you love yourself. I could identify with that part in you that you can't even see when you walk in here, because I know you, because you're me. The 12th step is all about carrying the message. It's about practicing that love, man. Carrying the message to the addict who still suffers. I'm an H&I guy. There's lots of ways to serve, but I'm big in H&I. The message was carried to me numerous times when I was sitting in those chairs, not knowing why my ass kept ending up there, thinking someone had it in for me or I was just unlucky. And the truth is, I had a disease that was undiagnosed, because it can only be diagnosed by us. We have to diagnose ourselves as having this disease. So they carried the message and they planted the seed in my head, and it was the right time of, like, my higher power, pain, circumstance that it took root, and I remembered, yeah, there's a place where people are doing this thing. And I was able to make it here. It took me a while, man. That's why I keep coming back. It's so powerful. You know? So I go into, I do H&I. But I serve in a lot of areas. I try to serve and live this program and practice it in all areas of my life. We have a symbol that talks about God, self, service, society. It's all grounded in goodwill. And, like, that's my balance. People think, a lot of people think that the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom, but that has to do with how many people you know in recovery. For me, it's how much goodwill am I applying in all those areas. Because if I have a balance of goodwill in all those areas, my point of freedom is limitless. So I try to give back. I try to do something for my society. I serve. I stay connected to my higher power, living a prayer. And I take care of myself today. I try to eat well. I struggle. It is my big struggle. And if you're new, that might sound like ridiculous to you, that like Ben and Jerry's is my problem. But like, stick around for a while. When you give up, you know, the lust, when you give up the cigarettes, when you give up the chew, you give up all the food. Food is the one area where you can't do complete abstinence. So that's my struggle. But the thing is, like, I take care of myself today. Like, I'm an avid mountain biker. I love mountain biking. And I just was at Dirt Fest out at Greystone. I run. People aren't chasing me. You know, I do. I try to take care of myself today. I try to eat healthy, and it's all the same thing. It's the mind, body, and spirit. And like living this program, it has to be on all three. I'm not saying I have to do them all perfectly. I'm saying if I don't put a sincere, conscious effort into all of them, then I'm going to be way out of bounds, and it's going to cause unmanageability. This thing with recovery, man, it's never over. We are never cured. And like we were talking about on the way up here, it's a shape-shifter. Just when you think you got freedom and you're all good, man, it comes at you some other way. And it doesn't come at you in the frontal assault of like you should get high. It comes in you like, who is that? You know? Or what I need to buy that. It comes to me in that idea that I'm lacking. The thing about the disease is like, okay, I'm just going to share this real quick because this is where I'm at. This past week, I had to go to court with my daughter because her ex-boyfriend put his hands on me. And for like a week and a half, I knew about this and I knew about going to court. And I wasn't talking about it. I wasn't talking about it with my sponsor. I wasn't talking about it with my friends because I was plotting. My mind went right back like 15 years ago, and I didn't want to tell anybody because I didn't want anybody to stop me. Because I knew the people in my life would tell me about the spiritual consequences of something. You know. But I went to a meeting the other night, and I told Eric what was going on, and of course Eric said, I got ski masks. But then we talked about it. And the thing is, talking about that and then talking, I started talking about it with a lot of people. And I went into the court hearing, and I'm so glad I did, because it was still very difficult to be in the same room as this kid. You know, because it wasn't even just that it happened, because I believe in second chances, that it happened, and then he got released from jail, and he tweeted, it was so worth it. And I was like, mother, like, no. But that's the disease, though.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? It comes in and tells me, like, it's okay. And I start justifying and rationalizing. It's one thing to think about acting out, but when I start putting in a plan and I start thinking how it's okay, that's where it gets scary. And then I keep it hidden. I don't talk about it. You know? The whole time thinking it ain't the disease. What any father would feel like. So I talked about it. As soon as the words left my mouth, I was able to see it objectively. Not just picking it apart with my disease. And
and how selfish I was. I was making it about me. You know what I mean? I was trying to react to my feelings. I wanted vengeance. You can't protect somebody from something that already happened. You know, I wanted them to hurt. And I kept thinking, this was 15 years ago. He knows who I think I am. So, the program works. But we have to keep working it. There's no holidays, there's no time off, and there's no finish line. A lot of people in my life have got clean and have been clean along with me that have decided in the past year that they're no longer addicts. And they think they can socially drink now. And some of them are shooting dope, charged up, going to lose custody of the 5 kids they had in recovery. So I don't know, man. I'm not leaving the window open. I'm not leaving the basement door unlocked for this thing to get in. You know, I just live this program to the best of my ability. I'm really grateful that I got this opportunity. Thank you.